walk us through a typical day for you?
Yeah.
Great.
Well, I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. That way Lumberg can't see me. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
Yeah. I just stare at my desk. But it looks like I'm working. I do that for probably another hour after lunch, too. I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Peter, would you be a good sport and indulge us and just tell us a little more?
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something about TPS reports.
The thing is, Bob, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
Don't care?
It's a problem of motivation, all right? Now, if I work off and Intertech ships a few extra units, I don't see another dime. So where's the motivation?
And here's something else, Bob. I have 8 different bosses right now.
Beg your pardon?
8 bosses.
8,
Bob. So that means that when I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming by to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That and the fear of losing my job. But you know, Bob, that'll only make someone work just hard enough not to get fired.
Would you bear with me for just a second, please?
Okay.
What if, and believe me,
this is so hypothetical,
but what if you were offered some kind of a stock option equity sharing program? Would that do anything for you?
I don't know, I guess.
Listen, I'm gonna go. It's been really nice talking to both of you guys.
Absolutely. Yeah, the pleasure's all on this side of the table, trust me.
Good luck with your layoffs, all right? I hope your filings go really well.
Okay. Excellent.
Great. Yeah.
That's from the modern classic Office Space. You know, it used to be you would work for a company in the not-too-recent past. You go to work for a company or a corporation, or you would be in a professional partnership or whatever it might be, and you would you'd start to work in that company, and you would stay with them for the duration of your working life, and you would retire from them. And some people have had that experience, and some people will have that, are in the process of having that experience. But the percentage of people who do now is much lower. They estimate now that a person entering into the workforce in their late teens and early 20s will change professions at least 9 times by the time they retire. And most people will certainly never be with the same company. Or they may be with the same company, but it might get bought out once or twice or 3 times or more. It's just a different world that we live in. See, the old bargain, the old contract, the way that it worked was you worked hard and you gave your loyalty with the expectation that you would be paid well, you would have benefits, hospitalization, vacation, a pension plan, so that someday you could retire. And that was the bargain. And that's how people understood it. But because times have changed so markedly over the last 20 or 30 years, that's really not the expectation that most people have when they first go to work. And because of that changing nature of that relationship between ourselves and our profession, whatever it is that we do, our employer, the company, whatever it is, because we have that has changed over time, the result is that our conception of why we work and what work means has changed also. I was thinking about this when I took the advice. I was listening to my own words in my sermon, and I went down to the Oregon district. You might remember after the shooting in Dayton, I encouraged people to pray first and then to take action where they felt was appropriate. But I asked them if they were in the Dayton area and they had the opportunity to go patronize some of the businesses in that part of the community, so that people, you could show that people didn't need to be afraid to go and support whatever businesses are down there. There's a variety. And I actually did that. I went down, had lunch with a friend and colleague, Daryl Fairchild. He's a United Methodist minister who's right now working at the at Dayton Children, Women and Children's Hospital. And he works mainly as a chaplain with little children and their parents. He does an incredible job. And he's also a Dayton City Commissioner. Dayton City Commission would be the same as like a town council. And so he was elected a year or two ago, and so he serves that body. And so I called him and said, "Hey, when you get a free day and you want to get lunch, I'll buy you lunch and we'll meet down in the Oregon district. I'll pump a little bit of money into the local economy and follow the advice, the prescription, you know, that I have given my own congregation." We met. We had a great time visiting and talking about the difficulties that the city was facing. And as a part of that, I saw, after we were done, there's a movie theater down there that shows independent movies called The Neon. And they had just done the world premiere of a movie called American Factory. You can actually now watch it on Netflix if you have it. And it's a documentary made by a couple from Dayton about a plant that opened in a shuttered GM factory. GM closed a big factory, laid off between 3,000 and 4,000 people in the Dayton area back in 2009, 2010, and the building was purchased by a company called Fuyao, which is one of the world's largest manufacturer of automobile glass. And the movie was about kind of the clashing cultures, the Chinese culture and the American culture, and their understanding around work. The Chinese supervisors who came out of a place where it was very common for people to work all of their days off on mandatory overtime. People would tell, they went to China and they met some of the people who worked in the factory in Shanghai, and they had people told stories of only getting to see family on holidays, because often they were working so much they just didn't have time to be able to get away, mostly working 6 and sometimes 7 days a week. And they did that because that was the ethic that they had been trained in, that's part of the culture that they grew up in, this understanding of work. You put the company above yourself. And then they interviewed the American workers, and the American workers were not adverse to working hard, but they seem to be a little more interested in some work-life balance. They complained about the pay and they complained about the benefits, and there were a lot of efforts to try and bridge the divide between those that had come over from China to help get the factory set up and those that had been hired from the Dayton area. But sometimes people didn't want to work overtime, and so they didn't. And they came from a background where it was their option to be able to do that. And there were these clashes. In the movie, there's these clashes because there's two different understandings about work, how much work is needed or necessary or appropriate. Got me thinking, what's the biblical understanding of work? Especially with us celebrating Labor Day tomorrow, many of us with a day off. I thought it might be interesting just to spend a little time in this. Remember that when the law is handed down to Moses, Moses leads a people who have just come out of slavery. And so, if you're a slave in Egypt, how many days off a week do you think you get? You get zero. And during the high holidays on the Egyptian calendar, how often do you think you got time off if you were a slave? If there are these feasts that are going to be laid out, if there are all of these celebrations that are going to be taking place, who do you think had to do that work to lay it out? People never got a day off. Friends, vast majority of the world never expects to get a day off. That's just the reality. And so Israel had come out of that environment of those expectations. And so you just can't emphasize more the importance of being included in the law in Leviticus 23, this idea of a day of rest. You know, work is important. It's very important. We had this neighbor. His name was Mr. Greenlee. And he had this big garden out in his front yard. It took up his entire front yard, and there was an apple tree that sat right in the middle of the yard. And young 6-7-year-old Brian, you couldn't find me when he was planting or when he was weeding that garden, but it was time for the harvest, I was ready. Especially his strawberries. And so Mr. Greenlee, he had been successful as a realtor, and he would occasionally drop a germ of wisdom, and he could quote the Proverbs. I remember this as a child, you know. And sometimes I would complain about working. Mr. Greenlee would drop little gems like this. Those who work their land will have abundant food, but those who chase fantasies have no sense. Proverbs 12:11. Proverbs 13:4. A sluggard's appetite is never filled, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied. Proverbs 12:24, diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in forced labor. And finally, Proverbs 14, another Mr. Greenleeism. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk leads only to poverty. I mean, work is important, right? The world, God has given us an amazing creation. He's given us an amazing world. He's given us all of these resources that exist to do incredible things. But we have to work to be able to kind of harness and capture all of these blessings so that we can all be sustained, so that we can all live, so that we can experience those blessings in real ways. And so, work is important. It's important not only to get things done, but it's important in the sense that we need to take care of one another, and we need to take care of this world that we live in. That's even built into the Old Testament law, where the fields had to go fallow every so many years, because there's this understanding that the land needs to be replenished. Stewardship and work are connected together. And God did not want His people to idolize work, either themselves in their own life or if they were employing or supervising other people. God did not want His people to idolize work, and so He gave them the gift of the Sabbath, a day of rest, a day of worship, and a day of rest. God wanted us to build margin. He wants us to have margin in our life so that you and I don't become so preoccupied with the responsibilities that we have or the things that we need to procure or the things that we would want to procure, that we don't become so consumed with that that we forget that which is really important. A relationship with our Father in heaven and our relationships with one another. There needs to be this work-life balance. And when that margin begins to be compromised, then there's a problem. Sometimes you don't get any choice. There are people in this world that sometimes they do not get any choice, and they have to do what they have to do in order to survive. But that is not God's plan for humanity. I mean, even the Old Testament festivals, some were connected to moments when God would reach directly into the world and change the course of history, like the Passover, the celebration of the angel of death passing over the homes of those who were faithful, who had sacrificed a lamb and had taken the blood and spread it on the doorsill so that the angel of death would know that requirement had been fulfilled there already. So that when the angel went to the houses where that wasn't the case, then the firstborn, not only child, but also among the flocks would be taken also. God reaching into the course of history to alter it so that His people could continue His mission and His ministry. And so there are festivals to commemorate these sorts of things, but most of the festivals and feasts were connected with the rhythms of the agricultural season. A celebration of the harvest, a celebration of the planting, a celebration of the planning of what was going to be planted in the next year, a celebration of the change of seasons. All of the things that are important when you're dependent upon the creation in order to survive. And in the context of every single one of those celebrations, God mandates no work be done. On the day that you engage, or in the time that you engage in that commemoration and celebration. Margin. God wants us to build in this margin of rest into our lives to find good work-life balance. And in the New Testament, we've seen that the keeping of the Sabbath is not primarily for the people's own well-being, but it's become this mark of who is really faithful and who really isn't. Anytime we keep any law of God, anytime we practice the faith in such a way that we try and set ourselves apart for the purpose of trying to get others to follow what it is that we would say as opposed to God, we've kind of wandered off of the reservation. And so Jesus calls out the Pharisees and their understanding of what rest and work and the nature of that relationship is supposed to be. God doesn't want to imprison us. He doesn't want to imprison our spirit and our soul. He wants to free us so that the work as we do it, whatever it is, and the completion of it to the best of our ability and in the relationships that we forge with others that we work with, that is fulfilling and meaningful, and it makes a difference. And it doesn't make any difference what particular profession or walk of life you happen to be in and how your time is invested. If you use that to give up praise to God by doing your best, and by being your best, and by becoming your best, that in and of itself is an act of worship and praise. But at the same end, God doesn't want us to identify ourselves by our work. He wants us to remember that we're daughters and sons. Daughters and sons of Him. That our primary identity is in who we are in relationship to Him, and that our value doesn't come primarily through what we do, but through what God does. Does that make sense? I mean, when people ask me to introduce myself, you meet new people, they always ask the same questions, you know. Hi, my name is Brian Bucher, and I'm a pastor. Unless, of course, I'm flying and I'm going to be trapped with somebody on a plane. That's led to some really uncomfortable conversations with some really angry people. It's led to some healing also, but I'm tempted. I don't do it, but I'm tempted to let people know that I'm not a pastor, but that I sell life insurance. Because I kind of do. But not in the way that people think. But when we identify ourselves, we tend to... that's one of the main identifiers. How strange would it be for me to come up and say, "Hi, I'm Brian Bucher, child of the King of all creation and a dedicated disciple of Jesus Christ." People look at you like you're crazy. Like you're insane. But that's where God wants us to take our primary identity, so that we do see one another as brothers and sisters. And as we work hard to earn a living, to provide for us and for others, and to make this world a better place, we remember others along the way. That it is those relationships that in the end really matter. Went to 3 football games in 3 days. Lima Senior LCC, you know, proud Lima Senior grad, class of 87, go Spartans. And then the Shawnee Delvis Jefferson game, proud father of Shawnee Indian students, taxpaying citizen of Shawnee Township, go Indians. And then went to Columbus yesterday and sat in the shoe and rooted on the Buckeyes against whatever Florida Atlantic is. I don't even know what they're... Florida Atlantic Seagulls, I don't know. What, Owls? Owls? Whoo! And went down yesterday, my brother and I and my brother's son... My nephew went down with my father, and Dad used to take us to games when we were little, when he could get a couple of tickets as an Ohio State alum. And then when my mom went to school and she got season tickets, we were asking Dad yesterday, "Can't you send Mom back to school so we can get season tickets again?" Doctorate, Mom. Think doctorate. Retirement, it's just the opportunity to do something new. Dr. Bucher. But we had these experiences of going down with my dad and walking across the engineering quad where campus, part of campus where he would go to school, and he'd point out the library that he would study and the rooms where he had the classrooms, and we'd stop at Tommy Subs and we'd get a sub and we'd sit down and we would eat it and get there in time to watch him warm up and watch the band come in and the whole deal, man. And then afterwards, not even being in a hurry, I used to joke, we'd go to Tommy's to get a sub for a brunch, and then we go to Tommy's afterwards to get a pizza for winter. And we did that yesterday with my nephew. And you know, I appreciate all the hard work the man has done. He just retired earlier this year. I appreciate all that he did to provide for us. and how he sacrificed himself for that purpose. But I'm even more appreciative of the time that he spent with us to do things like that. And that's what I was remembering this summer when I bundled up my kids and threw them in the RV and we headed out to the Grand Canyon, hoping and praying that the 25-year-old RV would make it there and back. But even if it didn't, that was going to provide a great story. Because it's in this work-life balance, it's remembering what it is that's truly important as we seek a complete relationship with God through Jesus Christ, that our lives become not lives that are built on sacrifice, but lives that are built on mercy. We become merciful people who understand what others go through. And as a part of that, are able to extend that mercy to others.